Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I guess all of us would like some closure, and I don't know really. Closure would be nice instead of having an open-ended question mark for the rest of our lives. This is unfamiliar territory. Never been here before.
I just feel like he would have come back. If this was on his terms, he would have come back or reached out or something to see or hear about Kaya. Because he loved her. I mean, he was a good dad. He did care about Kaya a lot, and that was my main factor in turning it in, is just the fact that, you know, he hasn't even reached out for anything about her. It's just kind of crazy when people just vanish. It's either like one of two things. It's either somebody did something and they're not coming back, or they've just completely dropped and changed their lives. And yeah, I don't know. I have no idea about Ben.
On July 20th, 2017, 30-year-old Benjamin Redfern was planning to travel from his home in Farmington, New Mexico, to attend his daughter's 6th birthday party in the nearby town of Aztec, a little under a half an hour away. Ben and his daughter's mother were no longer together, but they were committed to co-parenting their daughter, and Ben was known to be a loving father. By this time, Ben was in another relationship, and his current girlfriend was unhappy about him attending the party. On the way to the party, an argument ensued, and his girlfriend stopped the car and let Ben out, far from the party. Ben ended up walking the rest of the way, and finally made it there, 3 hours late. Everyone at the party noticed that Ben seemed upset and had a black eye, since he didn't have a vehicle to drive home due to what had happened earlier. Ben's dad gave him a ride home. In the car, his dad pleaded with Ben to come back to California with him. He feared for his son's safety. Ben declined the offer, but stated that he didn't want to go back to the apartment he shared with his girlfriend. After his dad dropped him off, this was when Ben dropped off the radar, which was out of character for him. He didn't go long periods of time without contact with his daughter. Months later, there was a sighting of Ben, but it's unclear what happened to him, and his family is desperate for answers. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 226 of The Vanished, Benjamin Redfern's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. For this story, we spoke with Ben's father, Mark. He told us about how he and his ex-wife adopted Benjamin.
He was less than a year old when Karen and I adopted him. We'd already adopted one baby from Korea. And at the airport, it was a cold day at JFK. We were living in Pennsylvania at the time, so we went to New York to pick him up. And we had brought along a snowsuit. We were trying to get him into the snowsuit, and he just simply refused. He stiffened his arms, he stiffened his legs, and he would not go. So the best we could do was just kind of tuck him into the body of the snowsuit and zip it up. very gregarious child, and he was a charmer. He loved to talk to people. He talked easily to people. Nothing shy about him at all. People just gravitated toward him. They loved him. I'm thinking it was sixth or seventh grade. One of his teachers approached me and said, you know, your son is just way far beyond everybody else in this class. I would like your permission to have him tested. And I said, sure, go ahead. And he tested in the IQ test in genius range.
We also spoke to Ben's mom, Karen. She was able to give us some insight into Benjamin's childhood and who he is as a person.
Well, we adopted him when he was, I believe, 4.5 months old. And so he really doesn't know any other life than life with us. His brother was 11 months old, and he was a lot more aware of what was going on than a 4.5 month old. We pretty much homesteaded when he was little. Well, until we moved out here, he was like 10, I think, or so, 9 or 10 when we moved to New Mexico. And we always lived on a little farm. Then when we moved out here, it was about 5 years where we lived in town. Then I moved back out here, so I've had a little farm again. So he's had both town life and country life, probably more country life than town life growing up. I homeschooled the kids. It was just John and Ben. We had a couple foster children here and there. I had foster children before they came along. And then after they came along, we had two little boys that we fostered for a while. So they were part of that. He was always just really easygoing. He loved little children. He just got along with everybody, always seemed to be happy. They loved playing with the animals. I know that. My mom would say, where are the boys? I said, oh, they're out in the barn. And we'd go out there and they're riding the sheep and the goats and they're playing with the babies. And so that was life before New Mexico. And then in New Mexico, we moved out here.
Karen and Mark's marriage began to deteriorate, and shortly after their move from Pennsylvania to New Mexico, they split up.
We were not there very long, let's say a year. Our marriage fell apart. Ben was the one who, when I told the boys what was going on, because by that time their mother had moved out of the house, Ben was the one who burst into tears and just wept inconsolably. His older brother seemed to not be affected at all, so it was very odd. The boys were with me for 2 years. I was single parenting. At that time, I had to put them into a private school. Well, I didn't have to, but I chose to, and then got to the point where I could no longer pay the tuition, so they ended up in public school. When I remarried, Ben's mother would, though I had custody of both the boys by that time, she would not allow the boys to go out of state.
After Mark moved out of the state, the boys remained with Karen in New Mexico. Karen told us that things were hard for them at the time.
His dad and I got divorced, and then things all really fell apart. His interest, once he became a teenager, was skateboarding. He loved skateboarding. That was going to be his life. It's really hard to be a single parent. Mark moved to California shortly after we got divorced, and pretty much John and Ben and I were here by ourselves, and that was really difficult. And so I was working minimum wage, trying to raise two teenage boys, and it was not a real good thing. They needed a lot more supervision than they got. According to Ben, once he started public school, that's when things started changing for him, I think. Before, he was around other kids, but not a whole lot. He didn't feel like I had prepared him for public school, which I hadn't. I had intended on homeschooling the whole way, but we had a homeschooling group of like 300 kids that we would get together with on a regular basis. So it's not like he wasn't around other children, but he said he felt he didn't fit in. On one hand, that's probably true. So I think, you know, once high school's hard for everybody anyway. And I feel like I wish I could have been more there for them, but I know given the circumstances, I don't know how I could have. I did the best I could, but he always seemed to be, you know, happy, relatively easygoing kid. He was never mean, never hateful. He seemed to be like a kind of a peacekeeper kind of, and never a bully that I saw.
In hindsight, Karen believes that her divorce was harder on her sons than she realized at the time.
The divorce affected them, I'm sure. It affects all kids. I know that for me personally, before we moved out here, I was emotionally really falling apart. I was not good. By the time we moved out here, I fell apart. I had times when I needed really professional help and I did not get it. So I know that personally, I did not help the cause at all because I was a wreck. I was broken, very broken. And after we moved out here, I really broke. So in my really bad broken spot, I made some really poor choices. I was trying to work. I was trying to be a mom and I was barely surviving. But, you know, we made it through. But I know that probably was harder on them than some other things because I was such a basket case. I don't know if it was seventh, eighth grade. And I believe he said he started smoking pot. That's all he's told me. He's never admitted to doing anything else. But I believe that it started out just smoking pot. And he's only ever, that I remember, mentioned that to me once. And he's never told me ever what he's ever done. I've heard what he's done. That and drinking. He was drinking. And I don't know what he was drinking.
Karen struggled financially after the divorce and worked long hours to keep the bills paid and put food on the table for her sons. She feels like this was the perfect storm for her boys. Being teens at the time, they began partying while she was working.
I was trying to work. I was trying to put food on the table for my kids. They would go stay with friends for the weekend, and I'm assuming they were doing it on the weekend. I don't know if they were doing it after school. By the time he hit junior and senior high school, senior year was hell. I could not keep him in school, and he wanted to quit, and I said, absolutely not. He'd make it to school, but then he'd disappear. So, you know, what do kids do? When are they partying? They're partying every minute they can party. So, you know, I had to work every day. Sometimes I didn't get home to work till 7 o'clock at night. And usually they knew to be there. I know there was a point where I was working two jobs and I come home from night at the second job by 10 o'clock at night. They'd be there waiting for me. And I would be so exhausted that they would just take my shoes off and cover me up with a blanket. And I could like almost guarantee they went out then after I was passed out because I was so exhausted. I couldn't even hardly see to drive home. And I know they probably took off at night when I was sleeping.
When Ben was in his early 20s, he began dating a woman named Sarah. And the two ended up having a daughter together. They named her Kaya. We also spoke to Sarah for this story. She told us how she met Ben and more about their relationship.
I met Ben through mutual friends, kind of like a party scene. It was beer pong, and I was just getting over a different relationship. Ben is very metrosexual. He cares about the way he looks. I mean, he was wearing like Versace sweaters and whatnot, and so he's very prideful about his appearance. We got to talking and started dating, and about 6 months into dating, I found out that I was pregnant, and I told him, you know, we're not getting married, but he moved into my mom's house, and he had a room there, and I had my own room, because my mom was like, you guys aren't sharing a room, even though I was pregnant. She was weird, but he was like a night owl. He had like really bad insomnia, and he would do digital media art stuff with gamers and their kill shots. He would like render to different music and whatnot. And he would get paid through PayPal for YouTube people. And so that's what he was doing for a while we were dating. Well, Kaya was born, and like a year later, we decided to break up. Just things weren't really working out. And it was like, you know, we had the child, and that was about the only thing that we had in common anymore. But we stayed pretty good co-parents and friends. I mean, we probably didn't talk for maybe like 6 weeks while we were healing from the breakup, but he was still a co-parent.
After their breakup, Ben and Sarah stayed in contact and continued to co-parent Kaya together.
he still came and saw Kaya and spent time. And then I ended up moving to Utah when our daughter was like 18 months. We would meet in Moab and do the drop, and we would do every 2 weeks with each other. So even after I moved away, he still kept in touch with me, still wanted to see his daughter. And I ended up moving back like 2 years later.
Sarah told us that prior to Ben disappearing in July of 2017, he seemed to be struggling. He was dealing with feelings of failure about where he was in life, and also had started dating a woman that many describe as abusive.
I think he really was dealing with depression real bad, like the last year that he was around, because he was turning 30 and he was still a server at Red Lobster and still barely, you know, getting by. And he was in an abusive relationship with this girl named Julyn, who goes by Jewel. And like May, before he went missing, she beat the ever-living crap out of him. He said that it was tweakers that jumped him, but we all got the vibe that she did it. But he had 2 black eyes, a broken eye socket, a busted eardrum, fractured jaw, and he didn't press any charges.
The relationship that Ben had with Jewel seemed to be tumultuous from the very beginning. And Ben isn't the only man who was in Jewel's life who reported abuse.
She's still around, and I happen to know who she's dating now because Farmington's small. And that poor individual is getting beaten up on the regular. So she's very abusive. And so I was wondering if maybe something didn't happen there, because before Ben started dating Jewel, she was engaged to this guy named Eduardo, and Jewel cheated on Eduardo with Ben, and Eduardo showed up to Ben's house where he was staying with Jewel with a gun and threatened Ben. And Ben hid. He never came out of the house. Like his roommates came out and made Eduardo go away, but Ben never showed his face, but continued to date Jewel. And as soon as Ben went missing or we lost contact, Jewel was back with Eduardo. And so that has always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Anybody can take a gun and threaten somebody, you know, and never shoot them or whatever. But just the fact that that had happened, and then Ben and Jewel have this falling out between May and July, where it's just extremely abusive. He's super depressed. When he came to my daughter's birthday party, he had his black eyes.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older 2 kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores. customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Karen was able to tell us more about the time that Ben had been beaten up.
Joel was a girlfriend that he had, and they were together, I don't know, a year maybe. And I know it was a volatile, putting it mildly, relationship. And he was not himself around Joel. More than once, I saw bruises on my son. I said, what are those bruises from? He said, oh, I was breaking up a fight when I went to pick up Joel from work. I'm thinking, no, he doesn't break up street fights where there's three guys involved. Yeah, he doesn't do that. But I let that one go. Well, then one day, Sarah called and said, Ben's in the emergency room. He got jumped. And it was this big, long story about, I don't remember exactly what it was, but he and Joel were doing something and the guys next door, something happened with the guys next door. Sarah sent me a picture and it looks like he'd been sliced ear to ear. Well, come to find out it wasn't, it was blood. His left eye socket was broken and his eardrum was busted. Well, I know that they had a big mag light that they kept by the door. And I believe, like 99% sure, that Joel went on one of her rampages and just slugged him. And she got him to the hospital. And the reason that I am like 99% sure this is the one that she did it was how when I walked into that emergency room, she panicked when she saw me. And she goes, and you know, and just got it all scared looking. And I'm thinking, instantly knew, I said, oh my gosh, you did it. I just had that feeling that she did it. I just knew it. And then when Ben came back in the room, they had gone to take x-rays. He never said a word. I'm thinking, this is bizarre. This is not, something is not right here. I said, well, do you feel safe going back? What happened? And Ben never said a word what happened. And I am like 99% sure she went on a rampage and just beat the crap out of him. You know how you just know certain things? I never said, did you do it? Because what good was that going to do? That wasn't going to do anything. I just said, do you feel safe going home? Ben never said a word. He wouldn't even look at me. And from the stories I've heard from Sarah and from other people, she was an extremely volatile person. And being around her, he just had to do what she said. Otherwise, you could tell all hell was going to break loose. As soon as Ben got involved with Joel, she cut him off from all his friends. They had no contact with him at all anymore. So there had to be something to do with that woman, at the very least of seeing him sinking into this big hole. And I could never talk to him because she was always around and he wouldn't talk to me anyway. You know, he would just say, oh, everything's fine. I've never physically seen her. I've never actually seen her be violent, but I've seen her blow up. And often you see things hindsight more than when you're there. I often would attribute it to it. Oh, he's partying. He's drinking. He's drunk. He's hungover, you know, but I could definitely see the entire time he was with her that he was not in a good place. And he had not been really in a good place for a long time.
Ben's life seemed to be spiraling. Karen told us about one of the last times that she saw Ben. He appeared to be distraught, leaving Karen concerned for her son.
Talking on the human side of Ben, one of the last times I talked with him, I knew he was just really struggling. He was just a basket case. He was just felt so broken. And I couldn't tell if he was broken, if he was afraid. I couldn't really tell what was really going on. But I said, well, you know, Ben, do you feel like some of your issues are an adoption issue? You know, I said, because often people have real issues with this. And as they were becoming teenagers, we talked about adoption. And I told them one day, this was after Mark had moved to California. They always knew that they were adopted. And we always had a homecoming day where we celebrated the day they came to be with our family. So they always knew that. We never really talked about what that meant. They were little kids. But once they became teenagers, it's like, you know, we need to talk about this. And I told them, I said that there's not a right or wrong answer. It's however you feel is the right answer. Do you ever feel like you would like to find your birth parents? And if you want to, that's fine. If you don't want to, that's fine. And Ben's response was, no, why should I? They deserted me as a helpless infant. So that was his feeling. He denied that later, but he did say that. But when I asked him, just like I said, towards the end of him being here, do you feel like the adoption is an issue with you? Are you really struggling with that? And I said, it's okay if it is. And he said, no, he said, you've always been my mom. You know, that's not an issue. That's not what my problem is. I said, well, what is the problem? And he would never say. So I'm sure that there may be part of it is an adoption thing, but I don't think really that he was so little. And we were, I think, open enough with him and gave him the options that I don't think the adoption is the major cause of his distress. I think there is that rejection feeling. I mean, how can it not be, you know? Because he said it, I think he was like 13 when he said it. He said those words. He only said it once, but of course the feeling's there. How can it not be there? You know, no matter how much you're loved, there's that feeling that somebody dumped you.
Sarah told us that she also knew that Ben struggled with feelings he had about being adopted.
I think that there's some deep mental, emotional damage from being adopted too. He's never wanted to reach out and find out who his parents are. He's always been like, they didn't want me, F them, I don't need them. And so, I mean, I know he's got like a lot of baggage going on where he was also medicating for that.
July 20th, 2017 is the day that Ben disappeared. It was also the day of his daughter's birthday party, and Ben had plans to attend.
The last time we saw him, July, they were supposed to be driving from Farmington to Aztec. It's about like 13 miles maybe. And Jewel dropped him off in the middle of nowhere and was like, figure it out. And so Ben showed up to the party. Eventually, he had walked to his mom's house. He was just completely depleted. Like he was so depressed. He just didn't have any fight left in him. And then it's like, that was the last time that we saw him.
Ben's dad, Mark, was also at the party that day with his wife. He told us more about what he observed at the party.
My wife and I went to the birthday party in 2017 when she was six, and Ben was there. I took him aside and had a heart-to-heart talk with him, quite apart from everybody else. And it became obvious as the afternoon at the birthday party wore on that he was apprehensive, scared. I knew that just a brief period of time preceding the birthday party, he had been beat up badly, had ended up in the hospital. Karen saw him there. In fact, I forget who had sent me the photograph. He was pounded pretty badly. And I heard strange things about the woman he was living with at the time. He seemed to be afraid, and he didn't know what he wanted to do with his life. He indicated that he needed to get out of there.
Mark and his wife became concerned about Ben's safety and decided to ask if he wanted to go back home with them.
My wife and I talked. We had a little huddle, and our car was totally packed because we were on a trip. We made room in the back seat, scooted stuff over, took Ben downtown Farmington, bought coffee. And while we're drinking the coffee in the car, said, we will take you back with us to California. Our home is open to you. You can come now. We can go by your house. We can pick up your clothes. If you're afraid to go back to your house, forget your clothes. Let's just go. and seemed almost enticed by the offer. And then he wanted to be taken back to the place where he was living, so we took him back. And as he got out of the car, and these were the last words that I ever heard from him, he said, "I don't want to go in there." And he did not go into the house. He went to the side of the house and he waited by the side of the house until we pulled away. And that's the last I saw of him.
It was after his dad dropped him off that Ben dropped off the radar. But it wasn't totally out of character for Ben to lose contact for periods of time. As time went on, Sarah became more and more concerned because Ben did make sure he kept in contact with Kaya. Even though Ben was missing from their lives, he wasn't reported missing until 2019. In the months after Sarah had last seen Ben at Kaya's birthday party, she received a call from Jewel.
Jewel made contact with me about 3 months after and was like, "Oh, hey, I think Ben's doing meth in a trailer in Bloomfield, and I don't think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to die." That was weird because we didn't even consider him missing at that point. For her to kind of just be like, "Hey, he's in Bloomfield doing meth," but nothing to back it up, no way to get a hold of him. I mean, I never saw Ben or knew Ben to do meth. I knew Ben to do cocaine, to do MDMA, which is ecstasy. That was like his favorite, and to smoke marijuana, but never meth. And so I'm like, I don't know, maybe he did follow the rabbit down, you know, the hole, and maybe he is just all messed out, homeless somewhere. But it just doesn't seem like Ben, because Ben had a lot of pride. Like, I just never would have put Ben as a bum. He would have figured it out. He could talk his way into anything or out of anything. Like, he was really good with words. He was extremely smart, could manipulate the situation. Like, if he was around, he would have been around. He would have figured out a way to come back, to be in Kaya's life, to do something. Like, that's just my belief. And so that's where I finally was like, okay, no, I need to turn this over to the police. And so we haven't had any contact with him since July of 2017. It's been a while, and he would kind of, you know, go off and do his own thing for maybe like 6 weeks to 2 months at a time, where he wouldn't have a cell phone because he would be in between jobs or whatever, where he wouldn't be contactable. But I mean, then he would be, you know, he'd show up or he'd make contact. And so the fact that it's been 2.5 years.
Mark, back in California, was not aware that anything was amiss. That was until Sarah contacted him to see if he had heard from Ben.
Ben was supposed to be paying child support, and Sarah let it go for, you know, well, let's say 3 months. And she got in touch with me and she said, "Do you know where Ben is?" And then the months dragged on and Sarah said, "Have you heard anything from him?" And no, nobody's heard anything. And it made no sense to me that he would just simply abandon his daughter, because I watched him over the years interact with her, and the love between the two is just, it's a strong bond. There's no way to deny that. And so how could this be? How could he just simply walk away from her? "I'm not going to pay child support. I'm just going to go disappear." No, I don't think so. So that sort of leads me, I guess, not led, but leads me to think that somebody has or had a very strong hold over his life. Perhaps it was, "You owe me X number of thousands of dollars for the drugs that I supplied you with, and I'm going to get back one way or the other, and therefore you will," and then fill in the blank. "You will come with me. You will do this for me." I don't know.
In February of 2019, Sarah decided it was time to get Ben's family involved and report Ben missing.
We turned in, we started this, I want to say like around February of this last year. My mental breakdown kind of pretty much where my daughter's asking me, you know, like, where's my dad? Is he okay? And I just got to the point where it was like, you know, I do need answers for her. He hasn't had any contact with any friends, and they actually wouldn't let me turn it over since I am not related and I am the baby mama, and it could be that he's just avoiding me. I had to have Karen talk to the detective, but I called the detective first and then gave Karen's information. So I've always been the one of the front of this. And Karen just kind of wants to think that he's just off living in, I don't know, someplace where there's no cellular, you know, data, or he's up in Colorado in the mountains where he doesn't have service or something. And I just don't think that. But he totally would have kept in contact with Kaya at some point within these last 2 years. I just know that if he was okay, he would have been like, hey, this is Ben. I don't have a phone. I'm just borrowing this one. Like, I haven't changed my number, and his mom hasn't changed her phone number, and she still has the home phone. So, I mean, even if he couldn't get a hold of anybody else, he knows his home phone number, and they still have a landline. The home phone number has been the same phone number for like the last 10 to 15 years.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Interestingly, after Ben was reported missing, they became aware of a sighting of Ben months after the July 2017 birthday party. It was in March of 2018 when Ben was seen working at a local Red Lobster. The person who saw Ben said that he was emotional and crying, and that he stated that he was going to leave town, but wouldn't say where or why. This sighting has been confirmed, but they learned that shortly after he was seen, he was no longer working there. Unfortunately, that's all that's been released about this sighting. For this story, we contacted the Farmington Police Department and requested an interview. They granted our request, and we spoke with Detective Heather Chavez, and also the Public Information Officer, Nicole Brown.
My name is Heather Chavez, and I'm a detective with the Farmington Police Department. I've been here just almost 19 years. I am currently the cold case missing persons detective. However, I've worked patrol, undercover narcotics, training division, and predominantly investigations because that's my passion. How I got into this line of work, it was just an interest. It fascinates me. And obviously, at the onset, can I make a difference? Can I help people? It's a job that weighs on you, but over the years, there's a few people here and there that you do make a difference in their lives, and it makes it worthwhile. So,
I am Nicole Brown. I am the public information officer for Farmington Police Department, and I started my career in dispatch. I worked there for 13 years, and just recently this year transitioned to the PIO position, and just a love for public safety in general. I joke and say it's the family business. My grandfather was a state police officer. My dad was a fire chief. And my significant other is an officer. I just feel like it's worthy to help your community and be an active participant in your community.
Detective Chavez told us how Ben's case landed on her desk.
So Sarah actually called to report him missing. Basically, it was, look, Benjamin's missing. He's the father of a young daughter. They share a child together. And she hadn't seen him for over 18 months. So, well, it starts at the patrol level. So the patrol officer will respond and they'll either meet the individual in person or over the phone. They'll take the report, but the patrol officer usually determines at that time while they're doing the report, is this an endangered person? Are they at risk or endangered? And it wasn't deemed at that time. It didn't meet the criteria. So basically the report was taken. Detectives are usually notified, but then they have to wait for the narrative portion to come so that we can do any follow-up. It was pretty cold by the time it was actually reported, so we were behind the curve. So we got the information that Sarah was able to provide us. We did talk with mom. We talked with some coworkers. And then what we did was put out a flyer post on the Farmington Police Department Facebook page and also San Juan County Crime Stoppers, to elicit tips if anybody had seen him, heard from him, or maybe had information about him. Unfortunately, those really led to dead ends. Some individuals did call in, but it was basically reiterating that Benjamin had had some issues in his life with substance abuse.
With the knowledge that Ben was seen in March of 2018 and allegedly was upset and said he was leaving the area, where would he have gone? If you look at Farmington on a map, it's only about an hour away from the Four Corners, which is where New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, and Utah meet. Could Ben have left the state? Detective Chavez also explained how they're also surrounded by reservations, which can cause some jurisdictional issues while searching for a missing person.
In addition to the states, we are also surrounded by three different Native American reservations. So those are different countries in and of themselves. Local state police officers are cross-commissioned to where they can do some things on the reservation. We are not, but we have a lot of contacts and a really good working relationship with the Navajo Nation PD and their criminal investigators. So, and the same with Southern Colorado and Utah. So we're pretty good that we all work together because we have the same issues. The borders are just invisible lines. Well, we're pretty lucky. The new chief for the Navajo Nation Police Department is one of our former police officers. So things are communication and efforts and cooperation is getting a lot better.
There has been some suspicion about the woman that Ben was dating back in July of 2017. Those who were close to Ben were concerned because he had been beaten up on more than one occasion when he was dating Jewel. Detective Chavez told us that she's been in contact with her.
I've been basically playing phone tag with her. She is cooperative and wants to talk with me. She still lives at the same place, so she's not trying to hide from law enforcement. So I would say that that girl that he was in that relationship with, she's definitely cooperating with law enforcement. I mean, like we see a lot, it's just that bad toxic relationship with drugs and alcohol, kind of difficult to escape it. But on the same note, I mean, she always returns my calls. She's never moved since, gosh, I think actually Benjamin used to live in the same apartment with her when they were together, and she's still in that same apartment. So she's not taking any efforts to hide from us. I wouldn't say that her behavior is suspect in any way.
Sarah told us about one theory she's considered about what may have happened to Ben.
I know he didn't make good decisions. I know he was into drugs, and I know he was arrested a couple of times. And so I'm not sure if he flipped and might have gave information up, and that could lead to why he kind of vanished, because he did keep some not so great company for friends. He got arrested in Arizona in like 2000, I want to say 15 or 16, and he had cocaine on him and marijuana and a whole bunch of stuff, and he got let out of it without anything happening. I mean, he didn't spend any time in jail. He didn't spend anything going to court, like nothing. So I kind of figured that he might have given information up. And so that's kind of where I think that what happened to him maybe is that he spoke to somebody about the wrong person. Because I have a feeling that he is dead. And I know that there's no proof or anything, but the fact that nobody's talked to him and his social hasn't been ran. And I mean, he was a good person with bad decisions, but he was a decent dad. And so I feel like even if he was still around, he would have made contact by now about our daughter. So I feel like he's not coming back. I know people get into things, so, and they lose sight of what's important, but he's been gone for 2 years. We thought he'd come back by now, but here we are.
On the other hand, Karen remains hopeful that Ben is out there somewhere alive.
There's lots of different theories floating around what happened to him. And the thing that I think is that he's on the run. And he's on the run for several reasons. I can tell you three reasons I think he's on the run. Sarah thinks that someone killed him. And I said, Sarah, I just don't feel that. I don't feel that at all. I feel that he's on the run. He had some drug issues, and I don't know if someone's after him. Sarah said that he narked on somebody. I don't know if he did or not. I know that he has some open warrants out for him on drug issues in Arizona. So it either is he's running from somebody in the drug world, or he is running from himself. And I've always told him, I said, you can run, but you can't run from yourself. It could be that this thing with Jewel was like the final straw of feeling so emasculated by her, if that's the right word. He just couldn't handle it anymore. And I really feel that she did that to him. Jewel and her ex-fiance, who then became her fiance again right after Ben was gone, from what I heard, it was really violent. That her ex came looking for Ben with a gun at a house he was staying at. There's violence all surrounding Jewel. Between her ex-fiance and Jewel herself, it was very violent. So I don't know if he was trying to escape the violence of that whole situation, or if he was just so broken he had to leave. The fact that he has made no contact with us at all makes me think that maybe he disappeared and didn't tell anybody because he's protecting us from who might come after us if we knew where he was. I go back and forth between thinking, oh, well, maybe I'm just being delusional, thinking the best possible thing. You know, Sarah thinks that he's dead.
Mark told us that he's concerned that Ben could be a John Doe somewhere, unable to be identified since he's adopted and they don't have a DNA sample to compare.
I mean, in my worst moments, I suspect foul play. I would not be surprised one day to get a call telling me that he's dead. But then on the other hand, if he's just a random dead person somewhere, he and I share no DNA. He shares no DNA with Karen. How are they going to identify this random dead body? I have no idea. I mean, it frightens me to think. I just don't know.
Detective Chavez brought up a good point about DNA in this case. They're hoping to be able to get a sample from Ben's daughter.
I've discussed that with Sarah and how we can do that without upsetting their daughter. I kind of feel like once that's done and submitted to NamUs, I'm crossing my fingers that that might help us.
If Ben is out there somewhere alive, Sarah explained one distinguishing feature that he has that could possibly help identify him.
His right hand, he got into a car accident when he was in high school and his arm went through the windshield and it tore tendons in his arm, and when they healed, they caused like this huge ball of tissue. And so his hand started deteriorating. He lost all the muscle in his right hand. So his right hand is very much smaller and decrepit. Like, you can tell that there's something wrong with his hand.
If you look up Ben's name online, you won't find much information. The media hasn't picked up Ben's story. Detective Chavez is hopeful that by getting Ben's story out there to the public, maybe some new leads will filter in.
Truly, we've tried to generate tips off of sharing this information with the public, interviewing the family members, and I've been working with NamUs as well. They've tried to offer some resources. It's just not really led anywhere. And truly, when it's this cold, the only thing that we're able to do, I think, proactively is we can always reshare the information to spark the public's interest again, so that we can kind of focus on kind of like what you're doing, humanizing the individual that's gone missing, and to remind people Benjamin has loved ones and he has got a daughter, and they want some type of closure, whether it's finding him, maybe he just needed a break, or unfortunately, if he's been deceased.
If anyone has information about Ben's disappearance, Detective Chavez gave us several different avenues for submitting tips, even anonymously, if that makes you feel more comfortable.
We have a tip line, which is area code 505-599-1068, or they can call San Juan County Crime Stoppers if they want to be anonymous, and that's 505-334-8477. Or they can also leave a message on my direct line, 505-566-2370. If they go through Crime Stoppers, I think Crime Stoppers offers some type of minimum award if it leads to his whereabouts. Benjamin, you know, he was a brother, he was a son, and he was a dad. Even if they think it's insignificant, it could be all the difference, you know? Share whatever information that they may have.
So what happened to Benjamin Redfern after he left his daughter's party back in July of 2017? We know that Ben had a lot of struggles in his life. He seemed depressed and had recently been assaulted on more than one occasion. He appeared to be in fear of his girlfriend and those around her. Could Ben have fallen off the radar intentionally to get away from that toxic relationship? Or perhaps to try to get himself clean? And what about that sighting of Ben in March of 2018? If he was in the area months later, where did he go after that? If he's been around and working within the community, someone must have seen him. Or did something happen to Ben after that 2018 sighting? Or is it as Karen suggested, that he could have intentionally disappeared and hasn't contacted his family in order to protect them? Sarah is worried that he's no longer alive, while Karen remains hopeful that he's out there somewhere. One part of this case that has made investigating difficult was the amount of time that went by from when he was last seen in July of 2017 and when he was reported missing in February of 2019. The gap of time made it so the detective was essentially handed a cold case on day one. They're hopeful that by getting his story out to the public, that someone will come forward with information that they may not even realize is important, since Ben's case has really gotten no media attention. If you have any information about the disappearance of Benjamin Redfern, please contact Detective Chavez at the Farmington Police Department by calling 505-566-2370.
You can also call their tip line at 505-599-1068. If you'd like to remain anonymous, you can call the San Juan County Crime Stoppers at 505-334-8477.
But I told the detective that I really think that that's where he is, why he disappeared, but I still want to know where my son is. I want to know where he is. I want his daughter to know more than for me. I'm a big girl. I can deal with it. I can handle it. But what he's doing to his little daughter, she's got a really good life. Her mama got married, and the man she married loves Kaya. We went to the wedding. You know, we're close. It's a really weird how Sarah and I have managed our life together. Is such a blessing, because before Kaya was even born, Sarah and her mother and I got together, and we decided we are forever connected because of this child. We will treat each other with kindness and love and respect, no matter what. So then Jason comes along, and Jason and Sarah married. And I told Jason, I said, you are always welcome in our house. You are part of their life. We love you, and we care about you. Then we met his parents, and at the wedding, they said, come sit with us. You're part of the family. And how often does that happen? They're all for Kaya. And so Kaya has a really wonderful group of people that surround her. And this whole thing is really not about me finding my son. To me, the whole thing is Kaya needs her daddy, and she needs to know where her daddy is and that her daddy's okay.
That brings us to the end of episode 226. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Alaska. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity.
The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.